I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 317. So this weekend, Colby and I went antiquing. And yes, my friend Sheila called me out because, you know, it's my birthday week. Well, when this airs, it's over. But she texts me. She's like, oh my God, I forgot you like to celebrate like your whole month of your birthday. Like, what have you been doing? And I'm like, it's fine. I'm old now. Like, I don't even.
Right. Where is she? 10 years ago?
I know. Now I'm like, I don't even care what we do on the birthday. Like, I'm so lackluster about birthdays now. And she goes, oh, I know. I saw antiquing on my Facebook. I'm like, yeah. So anyway, I posted this picture of Colby and me at this place here. It's called Lucky Rabbit, but it's like a antique store. And they always do decorations based on something. So like right now it's Mario. So they had like the duck hunt scene and like you could play duck hunt and all of that.
That's cool.
And then they've done like Schitt's Creek, and around, I think it was around Christmas one year, they did Stranger Things and they had like the lights on the wall, like with the alphabet. And they've done
your favorite new Christmas movie. Well, you hadn't seen it
before. Oh yeah, they did National Lampoon's before, and they did Wednesday.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Anyway, so while we were there, they had some vendors set outside. And look, y'all know that I am awkward as fuck. I'm anxious and I'm awkward. And I was walking down the road, drinking my little coffee because, you know, anxious person needs more caffeine. So we were walking down and somebody is very, very kind. It was like, oh my God, hey. And in my brain, I was panicking that it was somebody's face I should know. And I was like, oh my God, 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 oh my God. And so I just, in the most awkward, like, hey. Colby was like, what the fuck was that? And I was like, I didn't know. And he was like, you were so awkward. I was like, I know, I was awkward. I don't know what to do. Turns out it was Hannah, and we love her. And I'm sorry, Hannah. She listens, and she's great. Donna's even bought a shirt from her for me. And I was like, damn it, I almost wore that shirt. That would have been so cool if I had on the shirt that she made.
Yeah.
And her. And then I was like, figured it out from the Facebook and all the things. And then I was like, damn, I wish I would have known so I wouldn't have been so damn awkward.
Well, maybe you should have said, hey, how are you doing? And like kind of talk a little bit.
No, because I'm awkward and I'm like, don't want them to know that I don't know them if I should know them. God, I'm the worst. So I'm sorry, Hannah.
You should have called her out, Hannah.
Hannah, you really should have. You should have been like, I don't even know. But I think, I don't know. I'm so awkward. Why am I this way? Like, even telling the story, I'm awkward.
I mean, you are the one who thought that guy was waving at you at the frat party, and he wasn't.
He was in my biology class, though.
500 people were in that fucking biology class.
It was not that many, ma'am. It really wasn't. It was less than 100 people.
Oh, my God.
But they popped up all over campus. It was like a running joke with Donna, Tiffany, and my sister Casey, because I'd be like, oh, they're in my biology class. Because it was like my first semester in college, and it's like, I know people. I don't. They don't know me. I don't know their names. I just know their face, and they don't have a clue who I am.
Clearly.
Yeah, and this guy at this frat party, first ever frat party, and I'm like, Josie Gracie anymore. And he was waving at the person behind me, and I was like, oh, it's that cute guy from biology.
Hey, it's me.
Hey, oh. Not me.
Oh, God.
What a great time to be alive. God, I'm such a loser.
The thing is, he probably didn't even think you were waving at him.
He probably did. He probably did.
I wonder if he says to his friend or whatever, you remember that one time that I was at that frat party?
No.
And that girl thought I was waving at her?
No, because there's no possible way he remembers me. But there is this one guy that was in that biology class that he's still a man about town, and Colby doesn't appreciate it, but sometimes I'll go, that guy's in my biology class.
Y'all don't get it. They were everywhere.
They were everywhere.
And she had to say it every time.
Well, I mean, I wanted y'all to know.
And now if I would do that to her about something, she'd be like, I don't care.
I wouldn't say I don't care. I'd say, I know.
Yeah, exactly.
I would probably remember them. I'd probably be like, yeah, you pointed them out before.
But you would not say it like that.
I'm like, I know, you've told me. That's what I would say.
That is exactly it. And basically that says, I don't care. There was this one guy that...
The breakfast guy?
No, who's the guy that I thought was so cute?
Yes, that you were like, he's meant after my own heart because he would eat from his plate as he walked to his table.
He made that cereal look so good, too.
He was always eating bacon.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he would eat that cereal because I was a stalker. And he looked like Fred Flintstone to me.
Fred the Flintstone?
Fred the Flintstone. Fred Flintstone to me. I have no idea. Anyway, no, the guy.
The Walker guy?
Yes.
Yes. Let me tell him because they'll know what we're talking about.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but he was an extra large pizza.
Yes.
And I can't, like, he was just everywhere. He was one of those people, where's Waldo?
Yes.
He was there. Like, he was like the fucking wizard. Like, you didn't know you were looking for him, but there he is.
Yes.
And it was like, holy shit. Oh my God. Everywhere. And it would be like, Carrie would say she saw him over, like, across the thing. And I'm like, that's so weird. I literally just saw him.
He was everywhere.
Everywhere.
Plot twist, he had a twin.
Also, though, we found that out because he lost weight, remember?
Yes.
We were walking because, you know, like, we went through our stages. Yes. Oh, the freshman 85? We need to stop. Oh, God. But we were walking, and I swear to God, he had lost so much weight, and we were like...
Like, literally overnight.
How?
Remember that time we were like, oh, we're going to do so, because where we went in college, where you work out, was called the Pain Center. We're like, oh, we're going to do this. We are going to work out in the morning. I parked in an illegal parking space so we could drive over there. Remember that? Yeah. Okay. Because we weren't going to walk to the gym. We were going to drive to the gym. And so we were like, oh, we're going to get there so early. We're going to do this. And we got there and, like, all of the ROTC was there. And one of the guys that we knew from our English class, and we were like, you want to play ping pong?
And then we sucked so fucking bad. It was a workout because we had to chase that fucking ball.
Do you want to, like, get on the treadmill, lift some weights? You want to play ping pong?
Well, because we were on, like, the indoor walking track, and we're like, yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it. And then, yeah, the whole fucking ROTC comes up in there.
Lapped us, like, six times.
And it was like, yeah, let's go.
Good times.
Man, college was fun, though. Mm-hmm.
But let me just tell you, you could not pay me to go back to high school.
Oh, fuck no. You couldn't pay me back to go back to college.
I would do college again, and I would do it so differently.
Well, yeah. Okay, sorry. I thought you meant, like, right now. Or would you go back to that age and do it again?
Either one.
I would go back to that age and do it again and do it differently. But, like, right now?
If somebody's like, I will pay for your college, I would get my PhD.
Hell no.
Okay, here's a question. Speaking of, like, money, would you go back? This was our debate at work today. One of my coworkers said something. Somehow we got to talking about. They said, which one of your, or would you, and if you would, which one of your coworkers would you body slam for $2 million? Mm-hmm. And I was like, all of you.
Yeah, anyone.
I was like, I would body slam anybody on this fucking planet for $2 million. I would body slam my mama for $2 million.
For sure.
And they were like, you would body slam your mom? And I was like, my mom would be pissed at me if I did not body slam her for $2 million.
Right?
I was like, she could have, like, in-home care for the rest of her life. They're like, she did after you body slammed her. I was like, well, I'm sure there's a mat.
Yeah, like, I mean, is it just like, again, you have to set it up. Like, are you just, like, randomly just like, whoa,
yes,
and taking them down? Also, have y'all heard that pop it with my elbow?
Go lip it.
I mean, if it's just like, okay, hey, you get to come up here to the mat and body slam one of your coworkers. Hell yeah.
For sure a coworker. My mom, like, I would do it. I'd be like, I'm so sorry, mama, but, oh, you know, like, that's not what you sound like doing a body slam. I don't know what that was. But abso-fucking-lutely, I would.
$2 million?
Do you know what I could do with two? Do you know how many student loans that could pay off with $2 million?
I'd body slam my mom, too, but it'd get messy.
Yours would be so easy to body slam, though.
You're like, and a whoo, and then pit, 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 the ashes.
Yes, you're like, I'm joking, water.
Dark humor.
We asked this little, like, teenage girl, would you blah, blah, blah. She said, I'd do it for $2.
I mean, same.
I mean, $2 is $2.
I mean, honestly, not $2 because I would hurt myself more than the $2 is worth. But $2 million, yes. $1,000, yes.
I wouldn't do my mom for $1,000, but I'd do you for $1,000.
Well, yeah, because that would be like cushion for you when you fail.
Why am I falling if I body slam you?
Well, you know what I mean, because you're going to fall on top of me.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
God, you never...
Y'all, look, I was listening back to the episode from last week where I was... Donna and I were talking about the teeth thing and how I just did not understand what she was saying. And when I listened back, I was like, wow, she was really fucking clear and I'm an idiot. Like, I'm the one that wasn't understanding. And I'm like... No, which is like story of our lives, but mm-hmm. still.
Would you get a face tattoo for $1,000?
No, absolutely not.
Would you get it for $1,000,000?
Oh, a white one.
Oh, Lord.
I don't know. Do I have to leave it forever? Can I get it lasered off?
Well, you can do whatever you want to with the money after you get it. Would you get one that said Creepinati across your forehead?
For how much?
$1,000,000.
Absolutely not. Would you?
For $1,000,000?
$1,000,000 is a lot of money, but is it enough to last you the rest of your lifetime? Well, you do work from home, though, so you could. I couldn't work with my on my head.
Yeah, I would just wear makeup all the time.
Makeup does not hide a tattoo, ma'am.
Tell that to Kat Von D's.
I know, but I'm saying, like, just like your everyday foundation doesn't.
The way she's looking at me.
Well, I'm trying to think of that TikToker's name that I follow that has that word on her cheek. Uh-huh.
What does it even say? I
Googled it before. It's something like... I forgot.
Oh, good.
Good story. Okay, I did the quick little goog, and so her TikTok name is, okay, her TikTok is like something backwards, but it's like Mwak. It's like M-U-A-W-K. Anyway, she does makeup and all the things, but her tattoo is, what?
What is her name again? Spell it out.
M-U-A-W-K. What am I doing wrong?
M-U-A?
W-K.
M-U-A. Is Duh. Makeup artist. And she does makeup tutorials on TikTok.
Well, I'm such a loser.
It's something backwards.
No, I swear I thought I remember her saying something one time. It was something backwards. You know what? Shut up. I hate everything right now.
Okay.
I knew it was going to be something really bad when she said, wait, what is it again? Okay. But her thing is mephobia. It's like M-E-P-H-O-B-I-A. And it's the fear of becoming so awesome that the human race can't handle it.
And she's got it tattooed like on her cheek or
yeah.
something?
Yeah. I hate everything right now.
Walk. That's why I was like, are you trying to do like the kiss sound, like the moi kind of thing? And I was like, M-U-A. No.
Her name's like Whitney Kristen or something. And she's like, makeup artist Whitney Kristen. Good God.
I'm going to just put this out here, okay? I got Carrie a gift for her birthday.
I was gonna say, I told you not to. I told Colby not to.
You did tell me not to. We had okay. it. Oh, my God. This is why we have it all recorded. And I said, okay, I'm not going to get you anything. And you're going to be like, Donna didn't get me anything. But I got her a little gift, okay? And mm-hmm. I'm thinking, this is going to be so fucking good. Who wants to put bets on it that she's going to be like, oh, oh, a tumbler. Oh, and you have a wine tumbler.
Whatever. It's, what is it?
I'm not telling you.
When do I get to know?
On your birthday?
Oh.
So we will report back, but y'all just let us know. Do you think she's going to be excited or it's something that she's had a hyperfixation on and she's now over it?
We'll find out. Now I'm like dying to know.
Anticipation.
Y'all, before we get into Donna's story, we have to talk about Babbel because Babbel is back. And now is the time to get in on learning a new language. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. And if that is you, well, it is time to make 2024 your year and be like, check that off the list.
And especially if that was one of your New Year's resolutions or anything, you still got time.
You got a lot of months left. And you know what? With Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. And if that's the case, think what you could do by the end of the year.
The thing that sets Babbel apart is its science-backed language learning that actually works. Babbel has quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks, just like Carrie said.
What I like about Babbel most is that it's very user-friendly and that there's different tools to help you learn a new language. So it's not just learning words, it's actually learning conversations. You learn how to order food. You don't just learn the word of the food. You learn how to ask for directions, be able to talk to people like merchants and all of that. So if you have traveling on your to-do list in 2024 or 2025, now is the time.
Also, Babbel has speech recognition technology that helps you improve your pronunciation and your accent.
This is also one of my favorite parts about Babbel, because when you have such a thick accent like Donna and I do, it can be really hard to speak another language without having your already accent imposed on that language. And with the speech recognition technology, you really can learn how to say things correctly with the right pronunciation, but also the accent. Don't believe us? Then just check out the studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others that have proven Babbel is better. For example, one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester of college. And it is way cheaper. Trust me and my student loans.
And if you still have doubt, don't worry, because Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee.
Right now, there is a special limited-time deal for y'all. You can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but you know, it's only for y'all, so you got to go over to babbel.com/creep.
That's babbel.com/creep, C-R-E-E-P.
Rules and restrictions may apply, but for up to 60% off of your subscription, head on over to babbel.com/creep.
All right, for this story, we're going to Washington State, specifically the Olympic National Park. There's a lake there, Lake Crescent, and it's the second largest lake in Washington. Originally, it was said that two native tribes lived in this area, and they ended up having this epic battle between them. Well, there is this big mountain that was known as Mount Storm King. It watched the two tribes be so brutal to each other until it couldn't stand to bear witness to it any longer. It ripped a large boulder from itself and hurled it down to them, forcing them to break apart and stop the fighting. But this boulder was so heavy and was thrown with such might that it killed many of the warriors, and it also landed at the river and cut off access to the river. It was kind of like dammed like a beaver does. This meant that water started to collect and it rose and it created Lake Crescent. Now, no tribe would ever go near the lake because they were so scared of that legend and that there were warriors that never saw the light of day after that. Now, you might not believe this story, and that's fine, to each their own. Wikipedia says that the lake was formed during the last ice age when glaciers carved out some deep valleys. But then about 8,000 years ago, there was a landslide that dammed a creek and it split the lake into two. So Lake Crescent and Lake Sutherland. Whatever the origin is, the fact we do know is that the land around the lake is beautiful, serene, and could easily be called one of the wonders of the world. The lake itself is super deep. The deepest anyone has ever been able to measure is a little over 600 feet deep, but they think it could be more than 1,000 feet deep. I saw one article said that if you can't understand how deep that is, it's deep enough that the entire Space Needle could be inside and you would never know.
And you think of that like, okay, the ocean, but not a lake.
Right. Now, something else could be hidden in the dark depths of the lake, and that's the dead. The legend said that Lake Crescent never gives up its dead, and that started with some of the natives who were killed in that battle.
Are you doing this story because I'm about to go camping this weekend?
No.
Like the time that I did a cruise story right before you were going on a cruise?
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
Yeah, no, you'll see. There's been many fatalities where the bodies were never recovered, such as in 1929 when Russell and Blanche Warren were headed home and they had a new washing machine. The last time they were seen was close to the lake, but their bodies were never recovered.
That is very random tidbit of they had a new washing machine.
Well,
it's going to come into play.
Okay. Yes, thank you. God, tough crowd tonight. So in 2001, now remember, they went missing in 1929, but there were some researchers who recovered what looked to be like the lid of a washing machine and then the Warren's car, but their bodies were nowhere to be found. Another accident happened when 37-year-old Travis Valenti was kayaking on Lake Crescent. Him and his fiance at the time were just having their, you know, good old time, and his kayak capsized. So his fiance tried to save him, but her kayak overturned as well. So she had to swim to shore to save herself. But Travis wasn't so lucky, and his body, again, was never found. So if anyone wants to explore and enjoy Lake Crescent, they are warned to always use the buddy system, wear a life jacket, and they warn that the water is so frigidly cold, even in the summer, the surface temp is around 50 degrees.
Good God.
Yeah, and it's so deep and so dangerous, and it tends to swallow people whole. However, there was one body that Lake Crescent returned to its shore. So picture it. July 6, 1940, two fishermen saw something in the water, something wrapped up, and they thought at first it was an injured animal or something, but we all know it wasn't an animal, it was a human body. It was a body of a woman who was wrapped in blankets and hogtied with heavy rope. Now, here's the thing. Her body was different than anyone had ever seen before. Her face was unrecognizable. Like every feature had been polished or smoothed away. Her fingers and her toes were missing, but everything else was there. She wasn't really decomposed. Her body was ivory white, almost like marble. Investigators described her body as being soap-like and so fragile that it could be scooped away like putty with a teaspoon.
God.
The body was not bloated like normal bodies who have been submerged in water. And again, there was no decay, no smell of decay. It was like she had been mummified. Now, we've seen this before with old Whitey, the sailor who was in the boat that sunk, and his body's still down there in the freezing water, and people will like go dive to see him. But his body's still down there because, again, it's kind of stuck. But once a body has went through this transformation, it's about three times lighter than before, and this woman's body was less than 50 pounds when they performed the medical examination. What had happened to the body is called saponification, and lots of science stuff, you know, people in Carrie's freaking freshman biology class might know this, but basically the body fat interacted with the chemicals and minerals of the water, and it turned her into a soap-like wax figure. Then, because the lake is so freaking cold, it's like she was in the deep freeze the entire time her body was submerged. Now, the autopsy showed that she had been severely beaten and strangled. There were ropes around her wrist and her ankles because she had been hogtied. Now, the reason she finally floated to the top was that the rope had disintegrated over time, and when it became weak enough, it broke apart, and her body floated up to the top. Most say it's like Lake Crescent did everything in its power to preserve the body of this woman so she could finally get justice. Instead of hiding this body, it was going to expose the truth behind her gruesome murder. And although it was going to be tough without fingerprints or facial recognition, it wasn't impossible. Because of the weird mummification of this body and no identity for a while, locals started to call her the Lady of the Lake. So all the police had to go on was some clothing she had and her hair color. But then after 14 months of hard work and dedication by a man named Harlan McNutt, he was a medical student who was helping out with the autopsy. But because of Harlan, her identity was discovered. So 14 months of just hard work. Harlan had noticed that there was some unique dental work that had been preserved. And it was a 6-tooth bridge that was made of like beaten gold. So they sent out pictures of this plate to thousands and thousands of dentists. And finally, the police received a call from a dentist in South Dakota who had recognized the plate and was able to give identity to the Lady of the Lake. Her name was Haley Illingworth, and she was a woman who had been missing for 3 years. So just to think about that, she had been in that water for 3 years, and her body was basically
pristine.
Yeah. So who was Haley? She had been born in Kentucky to a farmer family, and she just always wanted more for her life. So she really never had a chance to plant roots down anywhere because she left at an early age and was trying to, you know, make something of herself. However, in 1936, she had found herself divorced twice and down on her luck. She was 35 years old, and she just seemed so unlucky in love and life. Haley was a waitress at the Lake Crescent Tavern, and just when she was thinking, what the fuck am I doing with my life? She struck up a romance with a local beer guy who would always make deliveries to the tavern. And you know that was probably the best butterflies for a while. Like having this crush, maybe flirting a little bit, like the best. And soon they became a couple, quickly got married. The man's name was Montgomery Illingworth, but everyone called him Monty. He was a ladies' man, a classic charmer, you know the type. And so that's what I'm saying. Those butterflies were flying. And this really was a whirlwind romance for them. So she was like, oh my God, my luck has finally changed. I was at the right place at the right time. And my Mr. Right literally came walking through the door and, oh yeah, he had beer. However, Haley's luck hadn't changed. Pretty much immediately after they were married, Haley would show up to work with bruises, black eyes, and even sometimes her teeth would be missing. The two had been spotted fighting outside their apartment in the wee hours multiple times. And let's just say that there was never really a honeymoon phase for them after the I do's. But right before Christmas, only 5 months after they were married, Haley didn't show up for work with bruises or cuts because she didn't show up at all. When questioned about it, Monty huffed and puffed about her leaving him for a sailor from Alaska. And even though no one knew what to believe, they knew that she had been beaten so badly by Monty, so maybe she had ran away with someone just to escape his wrath. So they decided to let her live her life wherever she was. She had to be safer than she was with Monty. So the last time anyone saw Haley was in the wee morning of December 22nd, 1937. Then about a year or so later, Monty was granted a divorce because no one could get in contact with Haley. She had basically deserted him. Now, Monty had moved on with his life rather quickly, and he was in California with a new woman whom was thought to have been like stepping out on Haley with. And oh yeah, it was the roommate of Haley's sister.
Yikes.
Anyway, now that Haley's body has been discovered in Lake Crescent, everyone was like, oh, she probably didn't run off with that Alaskan sailor dude. So the police started their investigation, and you know they're going to look at the spouse first, especially because he was so flippant about everything that had happened. And honestly, we've seen the movie enough. If anyone is so controlling and so abusive, they're not likely to be just like, oh, well, she got away from me.
Right.
Like, no, they're going to try to track down their victim and bring them back, make their life hell, you know, or worse. So when the police were looking, they didn't have a lot to go on. But turns out the rope would be a pivotal piece in the case. Basically, the rope would tie it all together, you could say. So the rope was one that was sold at Sears and Roebuck, and it was tracked to the tavern owner. And he was like, yeah, I still actually have some of that rope left, too. And he was like, but I'll tell you, one of the beer delivery guys had borrowed some because his truck had been pulled out of the mud, like it had to be pulled out. And of course, you know, we know that Monty was the beer delivery guy. And the owner was like, and that jackass never returned over 100 feet of rope to me. You know, like he was harboring some ill will, okay? And honestly, I just could think about that. Like, if you were, if something happened like that, I would be stewing over that. Like, that's not cheap, you know? And little did you know that it would actually hold, like, the clue, the linchpin in this whole case.
Right.
You know? So it really did, because it was so, like, what are the odds that the rope found on Haley's body was a rope that was borrowed from the tavern that she worked at, that Monty delivered to, and oh yeah, it was borrowed by Monty. Also, friends of Haley were able to identify some of the clothes found on her body, and then of course that dental plate. Now, on October 26, 1941, officers arrested Monty and brought him back to Port Angeles, which is where, like, the town that they lived in, for Haley's murder. And do you want to know what Monty's defense was?
If you say self-defense.
No.
What?
Worse.
Insanity?
No. He said, couldn't have been Haley's body. She was alive when I last saw her.
Jesus.
Like, sir? Okay. Get out of town with that lame-ass excuse, boy.
Oh my God, get out of town with those lame-ass lines.
Oh God, okay. Now, when the trial...
Get out of town, boy! Like, okay.
Now, when the trial began, World War II was happening. And this case was so sensational because of the way Haley's body was recovered that it was sometimes the headline instead of the World War II happenings. The trial lasted 9 days, and it took the jurors 4 hours to deliberate. And they ultimately found Monty guilty of second-degree murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison. However, he only served, do you want to guess how long?
7.
9 years.
I was so close.
You were so close, and was paroled in 1951.
That's awful.
Right. And I really have no idea why, like, or how that could even happen. The only thing I can think of is that he might have got paroled because they didn't believe it was premeditated. They believed that they had a really big fight and he ended up severely beating Haley and ultimately choking her to death. And then he hurried to get rid of her body by wrapping her in blankets, borrowing the rope, and tying some weights onto her body and threw her in the deep waters of Lake Crescent that always keeps its dead. Just an update on Monty, he moved back to California. And he lived there until he passed away in 1974.
God, he lived like a whole long life after that.
Mm-hmm.
Why did he get such few years?
Like, the only thing I can think about is it not being premeditated. But, like, you gave him second-degree murder. Like,
yeah,
that means it wasn't premeditated. How did he get out after 9 years? So, like I said, Lake Crescent always kept its dead, except this time. And I feel like, if you believe the origin story of the Mount Storm King not liking the violence it witnessed, it makes sense to think that the lake couldn't stomach the terrible murder of Haley, and it bid its time and did its thing to make sure her body would be discovered and Haley would never be forgotten, for she is the Lady of the Lake. Now, you know, they say when someone dies a violent death, their spirit might not be at peace. And the legend is that Haley's spirit still roams Lake Crescent and the tavern that she used to work at. Many tourists say that they've seen her apparition walking along the shoreline, sometimes smoking in the tavern, and one even said that she spoke to them before vanishing before their eyes. Some have even seen her, like, gliding across the lake. Staff at the lodge, which was the tavern when she worked there, they hear phantom footsteps up and down the stairs late into the evening to the wee morning hours. I don't know why I was saying wee morning hours so many times, but here we are. There's been doors that slammed, music that's played by itself, and even some lights that flicker when her name is mentioned. One person said that they saw someone struggling on the rowboat, and it looked like they dumped something into the lake, but then all of it disappeared, and they believed that they were witnessing Monty dispose of Haley's body. And if that is true, and just like all of the things that they've said, it seems like residual energy, and I really feel like Haley is now at peace. And that's the story of the Lady of the Lake.
I don't like that story.
I know, it's sad. But I love that, like, it really does make you think, and I know, like, you don't believe in the Mount Storm King and all of that, but, like, why her?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, do other bodies float up? Like, is that what you mean? Like, no other bodies float? Like, they all don't float down there?
She was weighed down and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, because of that saponification, her body was 3 times lighter.
Yeah. How many times do you have to practice that word?
Only a little bit. So I might be saying it wrong. So there's that.
I guess I don't understand the mechanics of the lake. So does nobody ever float up?
I think it's so deep that either before they do, the animals get them.
Yeah.
All the things, or like the car. But like, no one has found their bodies.
I wonder if somebody can even dive that deep.
They haven't been able to. And so, like, the only reason they think it's 1,000 feet is because they use, like, telephone wire or something to go down, like, you know, like, actual telephone wire, not, like, what you're plugging into your telephone to the thing, but, like, what the company would come out and put. And they could get it to 1,000 feet, but no one could really check to
be like, oh, is it just bending or is it stopping or is it,
Ugh, it just chills me to the bone to think about you're swimming in a lake that has dead bodies.
That's so true. Like, again, so many thank you things. For the way to a lake. Thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
That.
Well, but also this lake is just so deep. That's a difference. It's like, it's so fucking deep and so cold and all of that. Like, you're not going there.
But I mean, really, you get in the ocean, people died there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't.
I know you don't get in the water, period. But yeah, thank you. I'm going to be thinking about that the whole time on our little aluminum boat. And I'm going to be like, please don't rock this boat. Please don't rock this boat. Ain't no getting in the water to pee for me this weekend. Okay, so I just want to preface this with my story is pretty freaking heavy. It does involve some kids. So if you need to skip my story this week, you can. Because like I said, pretty heavy involving abuse. Domestic violence type stuff. We're talking about Teresa Knorr, and we hate her. She was born in 1946, Sacramento, California. I'm not really going to go into much of her, like, her parents, blah, blah, blah. We do know that her dad in the late 50s got diagnosed with Parkinson's. So, I mean, she was probably about 10 or 12 years old, and he had a lot of depression that came along with that because he had to quit his job and all the things. And so the way that he dealt with that was to take the aggression and the anger out on his family. And then because he lost his job, Teresa's mom was forced to basically keep everything going in the family, not only from the home front, but also financially working and all. Now, September 29th, 1962, when Teresa was just 16 years old, she met and married a man who was 21 named Clifford Clyde Sanders. They hadn't been together very long, but they got pregnant and got married very quickly. So her first child was Howard. They had a very tumultuous relationship. I think there was domestic violence on both parts. The couple was known to police because of the incidents that happened where, I mean, they just fought all the time. Now, Teresa, and I think Clifford was too, but they were both so terrified that the other one was having an affair. And that caused a lot of fights. And you'll see this throughout Teresa's subsequent marriages, that it's just a problem. Like, she thinks that every single person is having an affair. Now, this story was on an episode of the podcast Case File. And on that podcast, he said that part of the way that Teresa would create control in this relationship was that she would only give him like 50 cents a day for lunch, so that she could be sure that he wasn't going to nice places with, like, women and meeting women. Like, so she was very controlling, but also terrified that he was having an affair. But then there's also, like, this element of domestic violence that I think Teresa really tries to paint herself as the victim in versus just equally as toxic. And this is why. Now, on his birthday, they had a huge fight because he wanted to hang out with his friends instead of being at home with her. So they got in this big argument and he was like, I'm leaving. Well, Teresa shot him.
What?
Yes.
You said the T's very much on that.
Sorry. Of course, she gets arrested because she's using with a freaking rifle. So, apparently it was this rifle. I mean, you've got to, take the safety off. You've got to, cock it back. You've got to do all things, right? Uh-huh. This is not just necessarily, in the heat of the moment, we're having an argument and I'm fearful for my life. So, let me just, the gun went off. This is right. A fucking rifle. It's different. So, the police actually charged her with first-degree murder. And it went to trial. And at this point, they've got their son. And she's pregnant with their second child, very far along pregnant, so very obviously pregnant, which kind of paints a different picture with the jury. And, she claims self-defense.
All I can picture is Chicago. He had it coming.
Yes.
That whole cell block tango thing. But go ahead. I won't sing it for y'all.
But they painted him as being alcoholic, abusive, all the things. And... it's interesting because this story has been on a lot of different podcasts and a lot of different shows. And while there's many, many similarities every time you listen to something, there are things that say everybody was on her side about there being a lot of abuse. But then some stuff is there were members of his family that were testifying against her saying there was no abuse. So this is a very much of a he said, she said thing. And he's dead and can't defend himself. And eventually she was acquitted because they said that she did it based on self-defense. Meanwhile, though, she shot him through his wrist into his heart. So he was had his hand up, trying Ooh. To be no, don't, or block it or whatever. So it's was it really this self-defense? He's coming at you, or was he trying to protect himself,
But also not to side with her or anything, but also, he could have been attacking her, and then when she got the gun, he's like, oh, whoa, whoa, hold on. But if she would have dropped the gun, he would have hurt her or killed her.
True. So after she was acquitted, she gave birth to her second child, Sheila, and then that's when she started drinking a lot. She met another man whom she ended up marrying, super, super fast.
Could you marry someone if they had been tried for
no
their partner's death?
Well, no, I don't think so. Because I don't think so. Maybe. Probably not. I don't know.
I don't think I could. I would always just have that weird, wait, why did he hand me that drink? Is he trying to poison me? Why I think, is he doing this?
I think it depends on the circumstances. If you really got, I would have to get the transcripts and stuff. I would have to read all the facts. And if you got all of those facts in this case, there was, I feel like, enough to make you go, did she just kill him? Or was it really self-defense? There, to me, would be enough that would make me go, she really may have actually done this. Mm-hmm. And then in that case, no. But if it's a clear self-defense thing, then that's a whole different ballgame.
I still don't think I could, just because I think I would always be hyper-vigilant about things.
I can see that.
Now, I say that, but I don't believe that everyone should be like that. That's just me.
Yeah. So this marriage was short-lived because he found out that she was actually having an affair with his best friend. And so that marriage ended. Then she married a guy named Robert Knorr, hence the last name. They had, a crap ton of kids. They had Susan. They had William Robert. They had Robert Wallace.
Why do they want to do that to me?
And they had Teresa Marie, who went by Terry.
They needed to say nor more.
Right. Well, this was a marriage kind of like the first one. Very volatile. Very much of them both being abusive to each other. Very accusatory of each other having affairs, all the things. And so they eventually got a divorce. She did get married two more times after that. But we're not going to go into all this. Oh, well, actually, I'm going to go into one more. She married this guy named Chester Harris, who went by Chet. And he apparently was kind of a dickhead. He didn't really like kids or anything. And she was kind of cool with that because I don't think she really liked her kids. But the problem was, is that he actually was pretty close to Susan, and not in a gross way, in like a, they just formed a bond, and, you know, she liked to read and he was a copy editor for a newspaper, and they just bonded over like history and reading and all of that. And Teresa hated that. And I think that this is part of what ends up like fueling how terribly she treats her kids later. It's said that Teresa had schizophrenia, and I think that while in the beginning she had some delusions of like, maybe not delusions is the word I want to say, maybe paranoia, I should say, about thinking that people are, look, like all the men are out to get her, they're having affairs and all this. And it really, as she got older, because you got to remember, she got married when she was 16. She was like done having kids by the time she was like 24.
Gosh.
So schizophrenia does usually present in the early 20s. Don't quote me on this, but I think sometimes it's even a little bit later in women, but I may have made that statistic up. So you can kind of see the timeline of it starting to show.
We need new merch anyway, but we need to do that. I may have made that statistic up.
Yes, and don't quote me on this.
Yeah, don't quote me on this.
And this story takes place over so many years that it's kind of hard to wrap your head around what the kids are doing when, because the kids were able to go to school for a little while, and then she started pulling them out of school to, quote, homeschool them, but there was no homeschooling happening.
Ugh.
It was just her trying to control the kids, and because she was so abusive, verbally, physically, psychologically, like, terrible to these kids. And it really, like I said, took off after the divorce from Chet, and she really honed in on Susan after that. She began to think that Susan was possessed by a demon. But it was also really weird too, because she would send Susan and then later Sheila out to do sex work to make money for the family.
Wow.
And then there were times where like one of the sons, I can't remember what his fucking name is because I'm the worst podcaster ever.
Robert Wallace or Wallace Robert.
But he was the one of the ones, he was actually on that show Evil Lives Here.
Oh, shit.
This has been on a lot of shows. Like, this was on Deadly Women. This was on, I mean, this has been on like Cold Case Files. It's been on tons of stuff. I mean, you can do big old deep dives on this. And there's little details that are like, while very important, but they're different on all the different platforms. Like on Deadly Women, it has Terry on there, and her story about something is different than the son's on Evil Lives Here. And I'm like, I'll tell you what detail it is, because I'm like, that's a very fucking important detail.
Okay, because I was going to say, I mean, it could just be their
perspective. No, it's a very important detail, although it seems small, but anyway. But then, because at first I was like, well, maybe it's publications getting it confused because Terry's name is also Teresa. And so maybe it's like they're saying Terry because it said Teresa and she, you know, but no, because then I was like, no, it's not that, because the fucking siblings said something different. But anyway, so as the children like worked outside of the home, their mother was so controlling. Like the son that was on Evil Lives Here, he was saying that he worked at like a movie theater and that it was like the Ariel Castro of it all. You know how he would like set up traps and like pretend like he left and then would be like, haha, I didn't actually leave.
Yeah.
You know, better not try to get away kind of thing. She would do that. He had to walk to work, and then she would just like drive by while he's walking to work to make sure he was actually walking to work.
Oh my God.
Wouldn't take him to work. Wouldn't drive him. Just like would like drive by and like watch him, you know, and all of this. It's just this level of control and fear and abuse that is just running rampant throughout this house.
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of that Ruby Frankie that's going on right now. She was the YouTube mom.
Yes.
That psychiatrist or whatever.
Yes.
Because they abused those children and tortured them, but it was in like weird ways like that, like where they would have to carry a heavy box up and down the stairs so many times or whatever.
Yeah, and this, you know, and you can also see the decline in her mental health because, you know, at first they say that she had like this like immaculate house. It was very clean. It was very, you know, all the things. And then as she got further and further into her mental illness, like the house was disgusting. And but yet she would like wake the kids up in the middle of the night because, you know, a demon was going to come. And then she would make them sit in the living room on the floor and they couldn't go back to sleep. And she would like keep them awake, like, don't go to sleep, you know.
Gosh.
So it just, but there was also bad stuff like cigarette burns. And I mean, that's bad too, but like big time physical abuse.
It was physical, psychological.
Yes. Verbal, all the things. Yeah. They couldn't, I mean, she even like just took the phone out of the house. Like you can't have contact with anybody. But again, even when they did leave, like Susan and Sheila having to do the sex work and all that, they're so terrified that they're not going to say anything to anybody.
Right. Well, and it's not like they're going to somewhere safe either. You know what
correct.
I mean? Like
for sure,
going
the girls,
to
yeah,
some seedy areas to do this against your will. Like, yeah. Oh, bless their hearts.
So part of the problem that Teresa had with Susan was that she was jealous of her. She felt like, you know, Susan's getting older, getting more into her teenage years. She's hit puberty. She's becoming a woman. And Teresa was jealous of her because she felt like she was beautiful. And that because of the demon inside of Susan, she was stealing Teresa's good looks giving them to Susan. And then Susan's demon was taking Susan's weight and giving it to Teresa. So Teresa's like, I'm gaining weight because your demon is giving me your weight.
Wow.
And you're getting, you know, you're young and beautiful because you're stealing it from me.
Wow.
So she hated and really focused her rage onto Susan. It was really bad. Like she had a paddle that she would use to beat them. And Susan gets her fill of it. She's like, I'm done. And she's like, I'm going to run away. Now, there's some differences in what happens when she runs away that I've found in the various podcasts and shows and articles. Some stuff says that she did go to like Child Protective Services and they came knocking on the door and were like, hey, she's claiming this abuse. On Evil Lives Here, the brother talks about that. And he says that, yeah, Child Protective Services came in and they interviewed us all, but they interviewed them with Teresa in the room.
Of course.
And
God.
So he's like, abso-fucking-lutely not, because I know what's going to happen if we say anything. So we're not saying a fucking word. They're like, no, she doesn't abuse us. Not at all.
Right.
And so they, you know, were like, oh, this girl's just lying and is just a runaway. Send her back to her mom and, you know, close the case. This enraged Teresa. Like, this made everything worse. So as punishment, she handcuffed Susan to the kitchen table and left her there for 2 years.
For 2 years?
2 fucking years.
What?
Yes. Now, that there's a little of that part, too, I want to say, that I've heard a couple of different ways. But the son on Evil Lives Here did say 2 years. They said that on Deadly Women. But some other stuff said, like, she would handcuff her to the bed and let her, like, sleep in the bed. But she was so scared she would run at night. But basically, she was like, you have a demon in you, and I've got to lock the demon up.
Oh, my gosh.
But she was to the point where she had pressure ulcers from laying in the same spots underneath the table for so long. Then the other thing that she would do is, because she felt like Susan's losing all this weight, well, yeah, you have her fucking chained under the table. So she started force feeding her. And like to the point where she literally chipped her tooth. She was force feeding her so hard.
Oh my gosh.
And if Susan would throw up, she would make her eat the throw up.
Okay. No. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. Again, with the timeline of some of this, is a little off, because some of the things it made it seem like this next part happened when she got back from being like from running away, but other stuff was like, that's why she like chained her to the table. But at some point she was really angry with Susan. Part of what she would do is she would force the other children to be involved in the punishments of each other. So, like, they would have to hold each other down. They would be forced to hit each other because she wanted to make them accomplice or she wanted to make them a part of it so they would never run and tell anybody because they were fearful because she would put that fear in them like, well, you did it. You held her down. Well, mm-hmm. you hit her with the paddle too. You did this, so you're just as culpable as I am to put that fear in them. She had the boys hold Susan, and Terry, who's much younger, had to hold a gun on Susan, like had to hold like this rifle on Susan just to make sure she doesn't like run or whatever. While they're doing that, Teresa and one of the other sons is like in the kitchen going to get oatmeal. And when they're coming back out, the spoons fall out of the bowl and it scares Terry and she fires the gun.
Oh my gosh.
And she shoots Susan.
Is she dead?
No. This is the huge part that's also very small because she gets shot. But some of the stuff, like Terry herself says that Teresa shot Susan. But a lot of the stuff and the brother say Terry shot Susan. So it's like, she got shot. So it's like, but really who did it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because that part about like the bowl and the spoons clank, like falling and making a noise was in a couple of different things. But then other stuff said Terry's the one that, you know, she forced her to sit there and hold the gun on her. Some stuff said she got shot in the front. Some stuff it said she got shot in the back.
The only thing I could think about is that Terry said like Teresa shot her because of like her making her gun.
Well, and I think she has so, well, had she eventually passed away, but I think she had so much guilt and mental illness herself because of the trauma that she had to make the narrative what she could live with.
Yeah.
So after Susan was shot, she lived in the bathtub for like weeks. Teresa was like, put her in the bathtub. I don't want blood anywhere because she was so scared that something with evidence of everything would be tied to her. So she was like, put her in the bathtub. I don't want blood anywhere. Clean this shit up. So she lived in the bathtub for like 2 weeks. She made a full recovery. Like she basically lived through this, like in straight I survived moment. And as soon as she was basically well enough to come out of the bathtub, she was put right back under the table.
Gosh.
Now, at this point, Susan is like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't fucking do this anymore. So she is begging and begging and begging for her life. And please just let me go. Like, I won't tell anybody. Please just let me go. I'll go to live in Alaska. Just let me go. I won't tell anybody. Well, eventually, she broke down Teresa enough, asking over and over again that Teresa was like, okay, I'll let you go on one condition. You let me take the bullet out.
What?
Yeah. So she said that I don't want there to be any evidence of the shot, so you have to let me take the bullet out. They laid Susan on the kitchen table, and they took the fucking bullet out.
Oh, my God. Why wouldn't she have done that earlier on?
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Like, well, because she didn't have any intent of to let her go.
Yeah.
So after a couple of days after the bullet was removed. So, like, literally think about this girl with an X-Acto knife, literally had a bullet removed from her back.
Oh, fuck.
And, like, I think it was, like, around her shoulder blade. She starts getting sick, running fever, and slips into a coma.
Oh, my gosh.
The boys think that she has passed at this point because it had been, you know, like, I think a couple of weeks with her in the coma. Like, they were putting diapers on her because she couldn't control anything anymore. And then one day, Teresa tells the boys to put their sister in the car. They take all of her clothing, everything. They go to a place like on the side of the road, dump all the clothing out, take her diapers, put them on the pile too. And then the boys are forced to put Susan on the pile. Teresa pours the gasoline all over her, goes and sits in the car and tells the boy, light a match, burn this on fire.
Oh my gosh.
So the brothers, as much as they don't want to light their sister on fire, the only thing that they can take with this is it's like, okay, she's gone. Like, we have to do this. And they light the fire.
Yeah, it's like self-preservation.
Except she was not dead.
Oh my gosh.
She was literally burned alive on the side of the road.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she was like in a coma, but she was alive.
Yeah.
So when police find this body, Which, okay, I think I heard this on Case File, because there was a lot of like brush fires and stuff in the area. And so this, I think it was a police officer, saw it and was like, oh, that's just like from a lightning strike. It'll put itself out. Don't worry about it. And then later, somebody who knows a lot about the brush fire was like, no, that's not normal smoke. Went over there and then got a fire extinguisher, put it out, and was like, no, this is definitely not. The police were so confused with like the diapers and all, because they were like, oh my God, who is this Jane Doe? Did they have a kid we need to be finding? Like all this, but it was her diapers from them putting them on her when she was in her coma. At this point, the police have no idea what's going on in the house, and they have no idea who Susan is on the side of the road. They have absolutely no idea, because she's isolated them for so long that nobody, like even when they do composite sketches and all of that, and they know what clothes she had on, nobody fucking knows her to be like, oh, that's Susan.
Right.
So after Susan's murder, by the way, she was only 17 years old, Teresa turned her focus to Sheila. Now, she was forcing Sheila into sex work. And then I can't remember if this happened with Sheila or Susan. One of them had been hit by a car, like on their bike, and just like minor injuries, no big deal. She believed after they got hit by the car that they were then possessed by the demon.
Oh my gosh. She's like Ruby Frankie and that zombie mommy put into one.
Now, Sheila's abuse did last a little while, but it didn't last, I don't think, as long as Susan's. We don't know as much of the details about what happened to Sheila as we do Susan. But we do know that at some point, because she was forcing her to do sex work, Teresa believed that Sheila was pregnant and had an STI from doing sex work. She didn't have any of the above. But Teresa's like, Sheila, you gave me your STI from the toilet seat.
What the hell?
And Sheila's like, no, I didn't. And Teresa beat her and hogtied her and locked her in this tiny closet in the house.
Oh my God.
Now, this closet has no ventilation. It's summer. It's hot. She gave the other siblings instructions like, do not open that door. Do not feed her any food and do not give her water. I'm not exactly sure how long she was in there. I think weeks.
Oh my God.
But I never saw exactly how long she was in there. At one point, Teresa had actually left the house, and Terry could hear Sheila in the closet, like moaning, basically like literally dying in the closet.
Yeah.
So Terry opens the door and she gets a beer out to give to Sheila. She's got strict instructions, no food, no water. So I think in kid brain, she was like, well, I can't give her water. Let me give her this beer.
Yeah.
Sheila takes a couple of sips and she's like, please give me water. Well, Terry's getting the courage and was about to turn around and get her water when she heard Teresa get home.
Oh my gosh.
So Terry, of course, like shuts the door and like goes away. It wasn't long after that that Terry heard Sheila talking about there being a light at the top of the closet. And that she said, she was like, I think it's a way out. I'm going to crawl up there. And it wasn't long after that that she no longer heard Sheila talking. Sheila had passed away in the closet.
Oh my gosh.
Teresa had left her there for 3 more days, knowing that she had died in that closet.
Oh my God. Oh, fuck.
Just like before, she makes her sons help her get rid of the body, and Terry has to stay back to try to clean up the closet where Sheila had been because she had begun to decompose. This next part, I've heard a kind of a couple of different stories, but I'm going to tell you the part that the son tells on Evil Lives Here. They had her body in like a cardboard box in the trunk and were going to take it to bury it. They get to an area like kind of off this beaten path, and the boys get out of the car with their shovels to go start digging a hole. As they're starting, a police car pulls up behind their car.
Oh my God.
So they hide. Some stuff says they like ran and jumped back in the car and hid the shovels, but his story is they hid with their shovels. The police officer asks Teresa, like, what are you doing here? Because it was like midnight. And she was like, I've been driving and I'm just really sleepy. I just stopped to like catch a break because I was getting sleepy behind the wheel. The officer told her, okay, but you probably should move on pretty quickly. It smells like a deer died over here.
Oh my gosh.
And it wasn't. It was Sheila. So because she was like, okay, well, we can't have a body turn up here, get back in the car. And then they went somewhere else and dumped her, and her body was later found kind of beside a river. But because of the decomposition and where she was found and that she had been tied up and all the things, they didn't put together that this body that came about a year later than Susan's, that they were related at all. They right. had no idea. The police were no closer to putting this together than when they had Susan, because who the fuck knew? So because of Sheila decomposing in the closet for so long, she actually got some of their stuff out. They went into a hotel and she made Terry burn down the apartment.
What?
Right. So she put lighter fluid everywhere and lit it on fire. Now, basically, after this, they all kind of go their separate ways. Like, all the kids leave her. Terry, she was just 16, but she used Sheila's identification so that she could pretend to be an adult to get the fuck away from her mom. All the kids basically went different ways. Now, Robert Jr., like Robert Knorr, he was a junior. He was actually arrested in 1991 because he had killed a bartender during a robbery.
Fuck.
So he was sentenced to 16 years in prison. Now, right around this time, Terry is kind of getting in trouble with the law. And every time she's gotten in trouble, she's been like, hey, so this is the house I lived in. I lived in a fucking house of horrors. She killed my two sisters. This is everything that happened. And nobody believed her. And nobody believed her. She even told her therapist. Her therapist didn't believe her. Nobody fucking believed her.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't until Terry finally called the hotline for America's Most Wanted that they were like, you know what? Call the detectives of that county. And one of the detectives actually listened to her and started putting the pieces together. So what ended up happening, though, was that the brothers were arrested as well as Teresa.
Wow.
Because they did play a part. But, like, I think we're ignoring the fact of how much they were abused, too.
Yeah.
And forced, and the fear of God put in them. And if they saw what happened to Susan. When Susan ran away and tried to get help, we saw what happened to her. She lived under a fucking table for 2 years.
And it's like, okay, so if they don't do this, they're literally burning their sibling, okay?
Right.
What do they think their mom is going to do to them if they don't do this?
Correct.
You know, it's not like, oh, I didn't want to do my homework. This is seriously twisted shit.
Yes. And when Teresa was arrested, she was living in Salt Lake City, had like converted to Mormonism, was living in Salt Lake City under a different name. And she was acting as a caregiver for like this 86-year-old woman, like her live-in carer.
Wow.
Now, she was charged with 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of conspiracy to commit murder, 2 special circumstances, and murder by torture. She ended up pleading not guilty, but then when she found out one of her sons was going to testify against her, she was like, okay, actually, I did it, but like, take the death penalty off.
Wow.
And they're like, okay. So they gave her 2 life sentences. And she is, to this day, still incarcerated in California at the California Institution for Women. And she has her next parole hearing in July of this year.
Oh my gosh.
So William was sentenced to probation. I think it was like 5 years of probation and required to go to counseling. And then they ended up dropping the charges against Robert because they charged him with murder, too. He was the one that was in jail already for murder. They were like, we're going to charge you with murder again. And they ended up, he was like, no, I'll fucking testify. And they ended up like dropping all of that and then just charging him with accessory after the fact. And I think they let him serve that like concurrent with what he was already serving. Terry just had a really hard life after that. But what's so interesting is that they actually, Terry and Teresa had actually moved really close to one another after it was all done and they didn't even know it.
Wow.
But Terry died at the age of 41 in 2011. Teresa's older sister, Rosemary Norris, had actually been strangled to death in 1983. And after Teresa's arrest for the murders of her daughters, they did reopen that case to see if maybe Teresa had done it, but they couldn't prove it. And so her case remains unsolved to this day.
Oh, man.
And that's the story of basically this freaking house of horrors.
Oh my gosh, that makes your stomach want to turn. I can't get over the 2 years, 2 years being chained to the table.
I know. And, you know, Sheila faced a lot of the, like, force feedings and stuff like that that Susan had as well. So, I mean, they all were just completely tortured. And Terry says, like, before Susan passed, Susan told Sheila, like, you're going to be next. And then before Sheila passed, Sheila told Terry, like, you have to get out. Susan told me I was going to be next. You're going to be next. Like, you have to get out.
Yeah.
Isn't this story fucking terrible?
Terrible.
And, you know, I just...
Where did you find this at?
I don't even know. I have no idea how I found this. Did somebody tell me this one? I don't remember where I got this one.
Well, that's on brand.
I should have done this story on a day that I went first.
Yes, this is so freaking heavy.
If you recommended this story, I'm very sorry that I have the attention span and the memory of a gnat. Just the fucking mental health that all of these kids faced. I just feel so sorry for them all. But, like, Terry was so young. And if she really is the one that accidentally pulled the trigger, like, could she really not say it? Because she, again, she had to make the narrative in her, like, subconscious. Like, she probably truly believes that's how it happened.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, your subconscious will change a story to make it something that you can digest and literally live with, because yeah, otherwise you couldn't. It's just fucking heartbreaking.
It's like when you try to think of, like, not to say, like, what was the worst, what was it, but it's just like you think, and it's like there was so many years of just abuse and torture. There was no, like, happy points.
Like I said, too, she would force the siblings to join in on the torture, so they would have to help her, because if they didn't, then they would get the abuse. And it's like, like you said, it's fucking purely survival. And I just feel like the interviews that I saw, they just beat themselves up so much. Like, they have so much guilt. And, you know, they even talk about, like, they're not happy. Like, even when they feel happiness, they know they're not happy. You know what I mean? Like, they know that it's still a stifled emotion for them.
Yeah.
It just makes you so thankful for what you have.
But their story deserves to be told. And so.
Correct.
It's hard to hear it, but they had to live through that.
Right.
And some didn't survive.
And the fact that she is still up for parole.
Yeah.
Like, while she's significantly older, because this happened in the, you know, the 80s and all, while she's significantly older, and it's like, okay, we should maybe let her out now. Like, she's probably not a danger. No, we shouldn't.
Right. No.
She never deserves to see the light of day again.
No.
She kept her children in closets, under tables. She... without
them.
Yes, or force-fed them. And
yeah,
then without medication, extracted a fucking bullet with an X-Acto knife. Are you fucking kidding me?
Then just thinking about the force-feeding, though, too. Like, obviously, she was doing it very forceful because she broke the tooth and stuff. But, like, also, I just think about my stomach hurts right now. And I'm thinking, if you went weeks without eating and then was forced that much food down you, like, how bad that has to hurt on top of everything.
And then to have to eat your own vomit.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yes.
Oh, that's heavy. We need to end with something not heavy.
Well, don't look at me. I'm heavy.
Sorry to end with such a sad story. I really should have done that on a day that I went first, but I never know which is which.
She really doesn't. It's ridiculous. What else is ridiculous? She's been putting the main episodes on and girl got typos.
Bad. It's so bad.
On links. On the,
it's so
on the episode.
Bad. And I check it. It's what's so bad.
On this, what was her name? Something Bonnie?
Yes. And I put Boonie.
Well, and how it was spelled, it was like B-O-O-N-N-Y. And I was like, God, I'm glad Carrie had to put that one on there, because I would have never, like, spelled it right. And then I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that's right. So I Googled it and it came up. I was like, I'll fix it.
Yeah. Don't mind me. But, you know, go to the show notes for links to our advertisers.
Yes, please.
Then you won't have to remember. You can just go to the show notes and be like, click the hyperlink.
Yes. If she has it right.
I've messed the hyperlink up one time.
Twice.
Oh. Well, you know what? I don't have anything to say to that. But I do have something to say to y'all. Thank y'all so much for supporting us. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.